Hello. In this audio snippet, we will continue talking about the death of America that has just happened, and the events that have been going on that confirm that death and add more understanding about it. But before we start sharing some of the news stories related to all of this, we'd like to emphasize a concept that we may or may not have mentioned in previous recordings, and it's the fact that America died in stages, one colony at a time, and that the reason for that is as a in a certain way as a kind of a consequence of or a fitting poetic justice to one of the core attitudes that led to our death. And that is federalism, as we have shared in previous recordings. Federalism was always one of the fundamental flaws in our foundation. It was always this idea that we are 50 separate sovereign states, kind of put together in this kind of patchwork quilt kind of nation. And we really were never one nation living under one truth. It's as if each state wanted to preserve its own version, and I say that in quotes, its own version of the truth. We continued under that mindset. Why? Because the founding fathers, the wise founding fathers, decided it to be so. And we just went along with it and never questioned that core problem. And that led us to so many issues that we have spoken about in abundance previously. Federalism is elitism hiding under a pseudonym. It's like a wolf in sheep's clothing. The sheep's clothing says federalism, but underneath it is there it's a spirit or a mindset of elitism, and that has led to a lot of issues in not only at the broad level, for example, with slavery and other things, and currently we have the abortion thing where now abortion is okay in some states and not in others. And conservatives are just happy with that. That's the way it should be in their stupid understanding. So it's led to broad problems and also underlying issues, for example, in how it has stymied our development as a nation. It led to the concept of the Senate. The Senate is a constant blockade of transformative legislation because we've talked about all of this in the past. So federalism has always been a destructive force, and the 13 colonies were born under this idea that, yes, we're going to become one nation, but you're still going to protect our sovereignty. And as we've described before, the 11th Amendment was this horrible validation that the rights, the sovereignty of the state was more important than the rights of the individual. And the moment we passed the 11th Amendment, we basically started, it's like putting a nail in the coffin. It was a very crucial moment cementing our eventual death or sowing a destruction of death that eventually we, quote, harvested, sadly enough, a few days ago. So there's a fitting poetic justice in the truth declaring that, no, you're not going to die all at once because you were never one nation, one united nation under the truth. So the truth said, I'm going to kill you one at a time. So the truth started killing Pennsylvania, then Massachusetts, then New York, and then Maryland, then Virginia, then New Jersey, then Delaware, then Rhode Island, then New Hampshire, then Connecticut, then South Carolina, then Georgia, and finally North Carolina. It was a kind of a way of saying that that motto that conservatives are always quoting, one nation under God, was really nothing more than an empty phrase. Because we were never, quote, one nation under God. We were always 50 separate states. California doing its thing, New York doing its thing, and federalism protected that mindset, where every state was allowed to do their things, and conservatives were very happy with that. That was the way it's supposed to be, because that's how the Founding Fathers had established it. They establish it out of compromise and not being able to get to the real truth because of their unwillingness to fight for principles and the conditions of the day, and we never questioned it. So that's why America's death was spread out over 13 days, even though technically you could say that the moment that we crossed from the 5th of September 2023 into the 6th of September 2023, at that moment, the death was done. In other words, we had a chance to change our minds and change our course to repent and save this nation all the way up until the end of the 5th of September. And I'm still not clear whether our death happened at midnight of U.S. Eastern Time or if it really happened with Greenwich Mean Time. I would dare say it was Greenwich Mean Time, and if that's the case, then our death happened at 7 p.m. New York time on the 5th of September of 2023. But up until that moment, whatever that exact moment was, we had every opportunity. If we had repented as a nation at 6:59 p.m., of New York time of September the 5th, we would have been restored. We had every chance up until then. But as we went, we explained over and over again, all the news and everything was indicating that there was no chance in hell that we were going to repent. No chance whatsoever. Because we had, as a nation, made up our minds to go down the road of death. But we had every chance up until that last moment of the 5th of September. But once we crossed that Rubicon, that threshold, then it was over. Yes, the death took 13 days to complete, to kind of drain the life and the calling out of this nation and to kind of suck it out of the nation and put it in vessels that will preserve it and keep it for other people and other times. But the death happened on the 6th of September. And then you could say that the brain death of the country, the core death, you could say, happened from the 6th to the 8th. So on the 8th of September, there was a certain finality to the death, even though the death was final from the 6th, but I don't know how to explain it. On the 8th of September, there was a certain finality to it. We were brain dead as a nation. And then from the 9th all the way to the 18th, every remaining part of us, of our calling, of our future, of our manifest destiny was killed off one part at a time. So now let's start talking about some details about recent events. One thing that I had failed to mention last time when we were talking about Morocco and how the earthquake in Morocco seemed to kind of indicate or be a sign or a confirmation of America's death. And some of you may find it like it's unrelated and that I'm just exaggerating and just trying to make a square peg fit in a round hole, but I am convinced that there is a connection and that the earthquake did not literally happen here in America because it's not the time yet. There was a reason for it not happening literally and physically here in America. So it had to happen in a place with a name that is very similar to America's, Morocco, and near Marrakesh and by the Atlas Mountains. And we kind of spoke a little bit about what that signifies. Atlas, that figure that carries the weight of the world on its shoulders. And America had the weight of the world on its shoulders. We were the lighthouse, beacon on the hill for the world. And that was taken away from us. We are no longer that. And also the Atlas in a different sense represents the group of people in America, the truth seekers who have been bearing the burden for this nation, waiting for it to come alive. And because this nation refused to accept life, then the burden, in a sense, was taken away from the truth seekers and said, okay, you don't have to carry that burden anymore. And as the burden was taken away from us and dumped on the ground, it unleashed this earthquake of destruction on this in a literal sense in Morocco and in a figurative sense in a symbolic in a well symbolic but very real anyway nonetheless sense in America. But the thing is that what we wanted to mention about that earthquake that we failed to mention because we ran out of time, you could say, and we were talking about so many things, is let me find the article. Here's an article that I'm looking at. It was posted on September the 8th at 11:41 p.m. I imagine this is U.S. Eastern Time. I'm not sure. I guess it is because I'm looking at it in the U.S. Eastern Time Zone. So I imagine that's where that time comes from, a timestamp. But the thing is that it was posted on the gatewaypundit.com. And the title of the article was or is Breaking: Hundreds Dead in Morocco After Late Night 7.2 Magnitude Earthquake. This was like this was the posting. This was a news article that came out as the story of the earthquake spread across the world. And what I wanted to mention here is, just as a side note, it says here the area near the historic Marrakesh city was the hardest hit, but the tremors were felt as far away as Portugal in Algeria. I mean, that's how powerful the earthquake was. And what I wanted to read to you is this one line, that one paragraph with one sentence. It says the earthquake struck at 11:11 p.m. An aftershock hit just 19 minutes later. And the reason why I wanted to mention this is that in the previous recording, if I remember correctly, I felt the need to mention a little bit about the death of Latin America. When Latin America's calling died on the 29th of June, 2003, over 20 years ago, I was in this place. And I knew that I was waiting for some people, and I knew in my inner being that if those people did not show up by 11, 11 with 11 seconds. 11 a, it was a.m. 11 a.m. 11 a.m. with 11 seconds. That's how literal it was. If they didn't show up by that time, then I would know that Latin America's calling was over. So, and I remember that I was waiting in this place by myself, waiting for these people to show up. And I was interceding, and there was this earthquake that hit the place as I was waiting. And we've shared this before. The thing is that when I left that place and closed the door, never to go back, when I closed that black, it was a black door, I remember, if I remember correctly, because it was 20 years ago. When I closed this black metallic door, I waited literally with my watch, my digital watch, until it was exactly 11:11 with 11 seconds. And I closed the door, and I knew Latin America was dead, never to be restored again or cared for again. And Latin America has been on a deep decline ever since then. If you have doubts about that, just look at all the illegal aliens from Latin America flooding into the U.S. right now. That's how bad things are over there in that horrible part of the world. But it was 11:11, so it's interesting. And as I said, the death of Latin America was confirmed by that earthquake that hit the place as I was waiting. It was a strong tremor that damaged a building, a bridge, kind of an overpass / bridge that was nearby. And we've talked about this before, but it's interesting that this earthquake in Morocco, that was kind of the parallel of the earthquake that I felt related to Latin America, that this earthquake struck at exactly 11:11 p.m. It's not a coincidence. And the aftershock, it says here, hit just 19 minutes later, and I feel there's a deep significance to that. First of all, you know, the death of our country went from the 6th of September to the 18th of September. And in other words, on the 19th of September, we were post our full death. And so this aftershock hit just 19 minutes later. It's as if to say, oh yeah, the earthquake just happened. America just died. But there's going to be consequences, aftershocks of this death going forward for the rest of this country's existence, physical existence. That's one thing. And the other thing that I take from that is that, in a sense, we kind of irritated the truth beyond a certain point through our behavior when the, and I hate to say it, but I have to say it, the phrase COVID-19, I don't like to use the word COVID. I despise that word. For some reason, I can't say it. Just irritates me to no end, but I'll have to say it right now just to share this point. When our behavior related to COVID-19 was a manifestation of how deeply, deeply sick we were as a nation. And I don't mean sick in terms of the virus. I mean sick in our attitude, in our mindset, in our understanding of things. And not only the liberals, how they reacted and how many docile liberals submitted to the tyranny, but also how the conservatives reacted to the whole thing. And conservative Christians, you know, the cowardly conservative Christians who didn't do anything, those churches that just complied with everything, and also, and the more diehard conservatives who never saw the decay of things as a manifestation of, well, there's something wrong with our Constitution. Because clearly, it's more than just the liberals running amok. There's something fundamentally wrong here. When we had the elections stolen in 2020, It was done because the founding fathers stupidly allowed every state to define their own regulations on how to run elections. We had the 14th, I believe it was the 15th Amendment, one of the two, that supposedly attempted to penalize states when they disenfranchised voters. It was intended to protect the vote of black people in the South. But it was so toothless, the amendment, that it's really never been used. The penalties in that 15th Amendment to voter suppression were never used. But the thing is that the Constitution and our system was so flawed that it didn't have any sort of checks and any sort of way to protect against voter fraud. And all of that happened. And then we had the localized state stealing of elections, because we had a system that was also federalized, so localized. Federalized in the sense, I'm not using the term the way other people use it. I mean, federalized in the sense that it was split by federalism into state regulations. So the Democrats could go into each state and steal the election locally, and there was no way to fight that outside of the state. And conservatives never saw any of that. They just complained about all that was wrong and never said, well, there's something fundamentally wrong here with our system. The founding fathers made terrible mistakes in the way they enabled states to run their own elections, and we never set up a system of how to contend a fraudulent election, how to deal with elections being stolen. Because when mail fraud happened, voters got disenfranchised because every illegal ballot would nullify the ballot of a legal voter. So all of this was happening. And so the 15th Amendment could have kicked in, but the 15th Amendment, even if we had applied it, was so weak and so ambiguous that it really would have done little. My point is the reaction to COVID-19 made it very, it irritated the truth to no end, because it showed how deeply sick we were as a people. The liberals, with their tyranny and their sheepish submissiveness, and conservatives with their inability to see that all of the consequences of the tyranny were a reflection of how flawed our constitutional system was, and that the American Republic that died on the 5th of November 2008 needed to be replaced. We had the carcass there. It was rotting, sticking up to high heaven, and we were still treating it, propping it up as if it was legitimate. And we were seeing it completely falling apart, the conservatives, and they still did not want to replace it. They didn't want to bury that rotting cadaver and replace it with a living being. No, they wanted to stick to keep that rotting cadaver. It's like, you know, it's like somebody who has had, you know, their mother pass away, and I'm sure there's some movie about this somewhere, but you know, someone whose mother has passed away, and they just keep her in the attic on this rocking chair, and never bury her, because they don't want to admit the mother, your mama is dead. You know, your mama is dead, and we, the conservatives, needed to understand that your mama is dead. But no, my mama is still alive. I love my mommy, and that showed a deep sickness. When you think about it, that's a very sick behavior, and that's what conservatives were doing. At a deep, deep level, that's exactly what they were doing, and that was very sick. And because of that, I think that is what certified that our death, once we went past the 18th of September into the 19th of September, was going to be so final that there was going to be no way that we were going to recover from that. That's why I don't see any chance whatsoever of some miracle resurrection of the country and some miracle comeback, because our reaction towards the truth has been so fundamentally sick and sickening to the truth that we have used up every chance of redemption that we could have possibly had. So now that we've shared those two items, the first, the thing about the colonies dying separately, and the second thing about 11:11 p.m. and the Morocco earthquake, I'd like to share just like another separate thing. And it's related to September 11th. On September 11th, New Jersey, the state that I'm recording this from, died. And as we would try to explain in the previous recordings, or the previous recording, New Jersey represented the death of the dreamer personality. As we've said, there are five fundamental human personalities, but then that we're kind of born with in a sense. And we can receive an impartation of those personalities from other people, so we don't have to be born with them to operate in them. But what I mean is that those five personalities usually come like built in, like they're factory settings in people. And some people are born with one of them, other people with two, other people with all five, and so forth. But even if we're not born with a certain personality, we can receive an impartation of that personality from the people around us if we're open to it. But aside from those five personalities, there are two that I call wild card personalities that are always there. We're not born with them, but they're always there. And we are, if we have a heart open to them, we can embrace them and adopt them. And those two are the dreamer personality and the prosperer personality. And the dreamer is the one who, the dreamer personalities is the personality that prompts you to dream of big things, even in the middle, in the midst of smallness. And September 11th, 2023 was very significant because it represented the death of New Jersey, and New Jersey was the dreamer colony. New Jersey has always lived in the shadow of New York City. That's just a reality. I mean, whether New Jerseyans or however, whatever the name of is for people in New Jersey, whether New Jerseyans want to admit it or not, New Jersey has always lived under the shadow of New York City. New York City is across the Hudson River, across the river from New York, New Jersey. And like when I go on my lunch breaks here in Hoboken to the pier, I can look out to the Manhattan skyline, and it's like you sit there and you dream of what's on the other side. And that's what the dreamer does. It's in a small place, in this case, in my case, for example, Hoboken is a small town. But in the midst of the smallness, I look out and see this big dream, this big vision. And that's what New Jersey represented. So when New Jersey died, it's as if the American dream died, because the dreamer personality, that ability to dream was, it's like it was hoovered out of us, and it's gone. And I think it's not a coincidence that a lot of the people, illegals, who are coming to America are finding now that that American dream that they were chasing as they came here is not here anymore. And I've heard these testimonies of people, of some of the illegals talking about how they have found, they've been disappointed. Now that they're here in New York, in the New York area, they thought this was going to be this wonderful thing, and it's all chaos and this and that, and they are surprised at, and disappointed but by what they have found. And they'll be even more disappointed as the years go by, because the U.S. is now a third world country, just like the countries that they left. So they went from third world to third world. And now that ability to dream big dreams is gone. Some may fool themselves into thinking that they can dream big, but that ability to dream and achieve great things from smallness is gone, and it will be made evident as the years go by that the American dream was gone. And in a sense, the American dream died on September 11th, 2023, when the colony of New Jersey and its calling died. And September 11th, as we know, is very relevant in American history because, unfortunately, because of what happened in 2001. And we've talked about that before, but what I wanted to kind of briefly digress into is September 11th, 1863. Many people don't know about this, but I found this story, very interesting story, if I can find it again here. And it was posted on a blog site, I think. It's on, the address is, the domain name would be gatesofvienna.blogspot.com. Gates of Vienna, one word, .blog, as in, you know, blog, spot.com. The title of it, of the article is, quote, "The Other September 11th." This seems to be dated Monday, September 11th, 2006. So apparently this article was posted on a September 11th, but of 2006, which is 17 years ago, and that's interesting. So I'm just going to read some parts of this. It says, "At the siege of Vienna in 1683, Islam seemed poised to overrun Christian Europe." It says here, "The Ottoman Empire had been expanding into Europe ever since Constantinople fell to the Turks, and even before that. Wherever the Muslim armies went, they plundered cities, took slaves, turned churches into mosques, and converted many thousands of Christian captives to Islam at the point of a sword." So this article is talking about the expansion of the Ottoman Empire as it was conquering European territory. It says here, "The Sultan's army overran Greece, Bulgaria, Romania, and Serbia. They turned Protestant Hungary into a compliant vassal and made war repeatedly on Austria and the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. The Ottomans had designs on Vienna," you know, Vienna, Austria, "since the fall of the city would open the way into the heart of Austria and the rich principalities of southern Germany." So it says here, "Having failed to take Vienna in the siege of 1529, the Turks prepared a second attempt in 1683. So that would be 154 years later, if I'm correct. "Under the leadership of the Grand Vizier Pasha Kara Mustafa, and with their Tatar and Malaysian allies, they made their preparations and fought their way towards the capital, overrunning Austrian villages and smaller cities in their path and taking many captives. As the Muslim hordes approached Vienna, King Leopold fled west with most of the citizens, leaving a garrison of about 11,000 soldiers and 5,000 citizen volunteers to hold the city against the Turks. The Viennese raised buildings in the area around the city walls in order to deny the enemy cover and brought livestock and provender into the city to prepare for a siege. On July 16, 1683, the second siege of Vienna began. The tiny garrison in the city was no match for Kara Mustafa's army of 140,000, but the Grand Vizier decided to starve the city into submission rather than attempt a frontal assault on its defenses." And it says here, "One of the main reasons the Turks had such a success in the Balkans and Eastern Europe was that their Christian enemies were unable to unite against them. Since the Caliphate and the Ottoman Empire were one and the same thing, Islam experienced no such fractiousness. And it was a united horde that advanced inexorably through the mountain passes and across the plains towards Vienna. That kind of makes me think of the, how our country and America was split into these separate states, you know, federalism. And we were never, it kind of goes with what we were saying, and I didn't realize that this paragraph was in this article, to be frank. This correlates with what we were saying at the beginning about we not being a united nation. And in the same way, there was no unity in the Christians in the Balkans and Eastern Europe as they were being invaded by a united Turks army. And it kind of correlates with how America was overrun by a very united liberal front. I mean, liberals are, they every soldier is very compliant in the liberal army. They are just very, like, all thinking the same thing. They are very fascistic, very tyrannical. They run a very tight ship, and everybody has to think the same way. Anyone who digresses just one iota from the ideology is summarily executed, destroyed, smeared, you know, put out of existence. So it's a very united front. And then the conservatives with their federalism all split up and divided and no understanding that they don't unite behind the truth, one truth, because they're not interested in the truth. At least in the they're interested to a certain extent, but not completely. And that's why they were overrun, just like the Turks overran these Christians. So it says here, so it talks about the split and the division between the Christians in more detail here. And then eventually I want to get to, this part here. It was then at the last possible moment on the evening of September 11th that John Sobieski arrived at a hill north of the city. John Sobieski, if I'm not mistaken, was the Polish king, if I understand correctly. So the thing is that John Sobieski arrived at a hill north of the city, leading a force of 40,000 Poles and their German and Austrian allies. The battle began soon afterwards in the early morning hours of September the 12th. The Austrians and Germans attacked the Turks first at the center and on the left flank. The Turks counterattacked but held back a significant portion of their forces in anticipation of entering the city through a breach in the wall. That very morning, the Grand Vizier had prepared a second and more powerful charge to be set off under the Lobel bastion, one that would throw the city open for the Turkish forces once and for all. Unfortunately for Kara Mustafa, the Austrians within the city had mounted a counter-tunneling operation. The Austrian moles detected the Turkish mine, found the charge, and defused it. So it continues to talk about how eventually the Polish army and, you know, combined with the Germans and Austrians, were able to defeat the Turks and drive them back. So it says here, eventually the city was broken, the siege was broken, and the city was saved. And John the Third Sobieski was received as the hero of Vienna, though it was not evident at the time. The Ottoman tide had turned at the gates of Vienna and was about to recede, beginning its long withdrawal through the Balkans and Greece into Asia Minor over the next two centuries. So what the point of this is that on the evening of September 11th, when John Sobieski arrived, it turned the tide of the siege of Vienna. And once the Turks were repelled, then everything was, the Ottoman invasion began to recede, and they were eventually driven out of Europe. But that was the crucial moment, when the Poles, who had been having conflicts with other, you could, because Poland and Austria, it says here in the article, had long been traditional enemies. So Poland and Austria, you know, were odds, but they united and fought the Turks and were able to defeat them on September 11th, 1863. And that marked the end of the Muslim invasion of Europe, which was beaten back and did not happen again until the recent invasion that has been happening through the immigration of Muslims into Europe. So now there's a new invasion. It's just happening in a different way. And this one is probably worse in some ways because it's happening from within instead of this overt external attack. But the thing is that, and I believe I could be wrong, but that could be the motivation for why Osama bin burning in hell decided to do the attacks of 9/11 on September 11th. Usually, you know, some people say, oh, he did it because of, you know, 9/11 is the emergency number, you know, just like in the UK, it's 999. In America, it's 911 when you want to call emergency. But that's why he did it. And I think there's a connection there, but he might not have done it for that reason. I think he did it to kind of take back September 11th for the Muslims, for the followers of Bashuga, because September 11th had been a date of defeat, of Muslims being defeated by the Europeans. And so he wanted to take that date back. And it was a date of overcoming the defeat and overcoming a very desperate near-death situation and coming back to life. And September 11th, when we were attacked, we fought back, and we fought back with a vengeance. Two evil kingdoms went down, one for each tower. The kingdom of the Taliban's in Afghanistan and the kingdom of Saddam Hussein in Iraq. And what seemed to be like a sign of victory for the Muslims became a victory for democracy and freedom, at least to a certain extent, because unfortunately Bush messed it up. And then we made it worse, and now the Taliban are back. We left some parting gifts as we left, like $6 billion of equipment so that they can continue with their terrorism and oppressing their own people. And right now, women are being oppressed and all the horrors that we had helped to end have come back with a vengeance, because we as a country were dying and now we're dead. The thing is that September 11th was the date of coming back from near death and thriving. And so it's interesting that, on September 11th, the American dream died, as if to signify, no, you are not going to have a great comeback. No coming back from, no last-minute drive to score the winning touchdown in the last seconds against an almost unbeatable enemy, just like the way the New York Giants beat the up until then undefeated New England Patriots in that incredible Super Bowl. No one expected them to win. And being down in the last seconds and fourth down and long, and that long pass that Eli Manning threw to David Tyree that he caught with his helmet in a miraculous way. And then eventually we scored, the Giants scored the touchdown that won the game. The potential of that greatness. Oh, and by the way, the New York Giants play in New Jersey. They don't play in New York. They play in New Jersey at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. So that ability to come back from great odds to overcome and win are gone. And they died on September 11th. So all these conservatives could think that we're going to have a comeback and Trump's going to win the election and America will be great again and all this rubbish. Keep on dreaming. It's a wasted, it's a useless dream. It's just dream. That's all. Dreaming. That's all it is. Nothing more than an empty dream. And that's what the death of New Jersey on September 11th, 2023 represents. And interestingly, 1863, when this thing happened in the gates of Vienna, that was happening while we were in the midst of the Civil War here in America, because the American Civil War happened between 1861 and 1865. So right smack in the middle of our war, Civil War, when we were about to die, and become, you know, the split nation, this was happening in Europe. And then eventually we won the Civil War, but unfortunately we didn't win it the way we should have won it correctly. And we squandered the victory. We squandered the spoils, and we allowed slavery to come back in a more subtle form, in the form of the oppression of black people in the South for 100 more years after that. But so there's a connection to America in a sense, date-wise, because we were in the middle of this big fight for our life when this was happening here. Over in Europe, we were fighting here in America. And America died, New Jersey, and the dreams, the ability to dream big and actually achieve those dreams and not just have them be dreams, that died in September 11th, 2023, which is, if I do my arithmetic correctly, it's 160 years after September 11th, 1863. I'm not sure what that means, but it's interesting that it's exactly 160 years later. Now that we've talked about that, I just wanted to mention another thing about September 11th, and that would be related to this story. And I felt the need to find this story. In part because one day, I forget exactly what date it was, but I was watching the Fox Weather Channel, and they kept talking about a place called Leominster, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's spelled L-E-O-M-I-N-S-T-R, but they pronounce it Leominster, I think. That's how I remember it. The thing is that they kept talking about this little town in Massachusetts, Leominster, and what happened there. And they were even interviewing the mayor of Leominster. And I listened to the guy, and there was something about him. There was something special about him. I don't know how to explain it. He didn't look like your average cheap politician. There was something very, very decent about him. Like he was a good mayor. Be mistaken, but I think I looked it up somewhere that he or heard that he has been mayor of that town since 1994. So I think I could be wrong. Please don't. I apologize if I'm having this incorrectly, but I believe that he's been mayor quite a while. Decent fellow, and his name is had an Italian name. I would pronounce it Mazzarella, but I think. But they were pronouncing it Mazzarella. Mayor Dean Mazzarella. It's spelled M-A-Z-Z-A-R-E-L-L-A. Like mozzarella, but with an A instead of an O. So I think he doesn't pronounce it Mazzarella because it sounds like the, like mozzarella. But the thing is that it caught my attention to listen to him. And I felt like there was something there. Let me read the story. I looked it up and I saw the story on cbsnews.com. and the title of it is Catastrophic Floods, Leominster Under State of Emergency, Schools Closed Tuesday. By Tuesday, they meant Tuesday, September the 12th, because this story was posted on September 11th, 2023, updated at 11:17 p.m. By CBS Boston, because Boston is in Massachusetts, and this town is in Massachusetts. And it says here, Leominster is under a state of emergency due to catastrophic floods across the city. Schools are closed on Tuesday because buildings are flooded. Residents were being evacuated from across the city Monday night. The National Weather Service had a flash flood emergency in effect for Leominster, Fitchburg, and Lunenburg until 8 a.m. Tuesday. So it just describes all the things that happened, and it was really bad. It says here, quote, I've been around the city. I can just tell you, I've had to turn around 10 times, very few streets that aren't flooded at this particular point, unquote. Everything is just one big lake. They continue talking about all the disaster. It says here, the raging water was so intense, it washed away manhole covers, and sinkholes formed in parts of the city. It says here, someone said, there's a foot of water, maybe even a little bit more water than that is in the backyard. A foot of water, imagine that. I found it interesting that the Fox Weather Channel, when I was watching it that day, kept focusing on this little town of Leominster, talking about it. So it was really, really bad. They were showing some images there that were pretty impressive. I can see some pictures here in this news story of how flooded it got. But the reason why I wanted to share this is, first of all, this happened on September 11th. In Massachusetts, I know it's not in New Jersey. You know, thankfully, New Jersey didn't get, well, at least here in Hoboken, it wasn't that bad. Not bad at all, at least by the standards of what's happening everywhere else. But I wanted to mention that, it was on September 11th that this was happening, and in a town called Leominster. And every time I'd hear them pronouncing the name of the town, it will always sounding to me like lamenter, like someone lamenting a death. I don't know how to explain it. Like this town was being hit to manifest, so that people would focus on the lamenter, Leominster, the lamenter, and the lament over the death of the American dream. And I know it's not a coincidence. This very decent mayor kind of lamenting, literally, over what was happening to his town. A very decent man, that's the reality of America, despite some of the decent truth seekers in America, wishing this country well and hoping it would turn around, hoping that the American people would turn around. The American people said no, and therefore the dream has been flooded away. And this is a small town. Again, the same concept of the dreamer personality. Someone in a small town dreaming of big things. And that dream being washed away to be no more. And that's what has happened to America. I wanted to... As America's been dying, was dying, and now it's dead, fully dead. Some other interesting stories happened. let me share this other story that caught my attention. I do believe it's very relevant. And the headline, this is on thedailymail.com, posted on September the 18th. In other words, the last day of the death process of the country. That was the day that North Carolina, the colony of North Carolina, died. Let me just quickly read the headline. It says, William wades in. And it's interesting how it says wades, W-A-D-E-S, wades in. Prince meets UN Secretary General to discuss fighting climate change after getting waist-deep in the Hudson during solo visit to New York to unveil his Earthshot Prize finalists. So the thing is, Prince William decided to come to New York, and he arrived and was walking around New York on the last day of the death of the country. And I can see an image of him wading through some waters with some people. Not sure why. And the thing is, on September the 18th, all the pictures that are shown here, you know, the sky is gray. It's all like very sad. September the 18th here in New York was a very, very sad, grim day. It was raining all day, but it was not like, you know, flood rain. It was like this drizzle, just constant drizzle. And the sky was gray. It was a very, and the days had been kind of nice up until the 18th. And on the 18th, they were very sad. I had asked for the day off that day, days ahead, knowing that it would be a day of mourning, of lamentation over the full death of the country. So I didn't want to be working that day. And I remember I was inside my flat, and I was just depressed, and the weather was horrible outside, and I felt an incredible emptiness on the inside, as if someone was coming in, grabbing, like someone feels as if someone was taking their hands and draw and kind of digging deep into my organs, into my body, and just stripping them out. I don't know how to explain it. But there was a horrible emptiness. So all the images here shown of Prince William are with dark gray skies. And the thing I wanted to mention here in the midst of all this is that, and it's interesting, it says here, William, who flew commercial and was traveling without the Princess of Wales, went straight from the airport to Governor's Island, which sits in New York Harbor. So interesting that he went commercial, and that talks about his humility, and I think that humility comes from Princess Di, whose funeral happened on the on September the 6th. And remember, that was the day America died. That's when the death period began. So on the date of his mom's funeral, America died. And on the date of his grandmother's actual death, America, New York, died and became brain dead, as we explained before. So the two dates that mark, to me, September the 6th through September the 8th are the core of our death, because that's when we became brain dead. And those two dates are tied to this guy, to Prince William. And Prince William showed up on September the 18th, the last day of the death process, as if to say goodbye. You know, that's how it felt. I wish I could find it here, but somewhere in this article, it says, and I copy-pasted it, so I'm not going to read it from the article, but I know it's there somewhere. It says here, this is William's first visit to New York since 2014 and was postponed from last year due to the death of his grandmother, Queen Elizabeth II. So interesting. He was going to come last year, but his mom, his grandmother, Betty II died. So he postponed it. And interestingly, you know, that date would be significant 1 year later. It would be the brain death of America, the completion of the brain death of America, the death of New York, and the death of America, the brain death of America. And so he showed up in this year, 2023. But he had not been here since 2014. So he had not been in New York in a long, long time. And then he decided to come. And it was almost as if to say goodbye. They talk about him going through to this oyster shell place or whatever. I quoted here. I took a copy paste of a certain paragraph that reads, "The prince was due to see the giant pile of oyster shells that are donated by 75 restaurants in New York rather than being sent to landfill sites." So that's why he was waiting in the waters. And so he was looking at oyster stuff and so forth. And the significance to me of that is that, you know, oysters are known for, for having pearls, precious things inside of them. And it's as if this represents, it says here, the giant pile of oyster shells that are donated by 75 restaurants in New York rather than being sent to landfill sites. So it's almost like a figure of, you know, these treasures. So like if you think of the oyster as, you know, having a gem inside of it, a pearl. So in a sense, the oyster is like a treasure chest, if you catch my drift. So the oysters represent these treasure chests that have all these treasures, and it represents everything that was precious about this country. And this project takes these oysters and makes sure that they don't get thrown in the landfill, and that they get used. If you again catch my drift, and I think it kind of represents. And then Prince William comes to this to engage with these people, and it makes me think of, you know, coming to take what was precious in America and to prevent it being thrown away, in taking it to save it so that it will be used by people who will not waste it, if you catch my drift. And I hope this is a symbolic sign of England taking what was precious in America and hopefully making use of it someday. That's what I took from that. So it's not a coincidence he came on the 18th of September, the last day of America's death. He came to New York to kind of symbolically take these treasures. I know he came for the wrong reasons, climate change and all that rubbish, but forget that. Forget that. There had to be an excuse, and that was the excuse for him to come. I hope it speaks well of England, because I am concerned about England, because I've been hearing these stories of how bad things are getting. People getting arrested. A lady got arrested recently again for praying silently in front of an abortion clinic. Just pray, just standing there, not even just silently, just praying within her. That's all she was doing, just standing there outside on the other side of the street, and just standing there. And she was arrested again, even though she had already been on her previous arrest. A judge had declared that she had not done anything wrong. But you know what I call that? That's a thought crime. You know, because if a police officer comes to you and asks you, "What are you doing here?" I would say, "I'm thinking." Because, you know, prayer is thinking, especially if you're not speaking out loud. Isn't prayer thought? I mean, yes, you're directing your thoughts at a higher being, but they're still thoughts, right? So basically, if you arrest me for praying silently in front of an abortion clinic, you're basically accusing me of a thought crime. And lo and behold, thought crime is a term that, as you may know, comes from George Orwell and the novel 1984. So it's Orwellian. I mean, literally Orwellian to arrest somebody for a thought crime. So if I stand in front of Parliament and pray for the destruction of all the bastards, the MPs in Parliament who oppose the truth, who support the oppression of the British people, should I get arrested for that? I wonder. So I'm concerned about England, but I take this as a sign of hope. And I know it's symbolic. I know it represents something. And even if England don't accept it, it will be the act itself is symbolic that it's been taken to England. And if England doesn't embrace it, then it will be taken from England to another place. But I think it has been absorbed into England, and it's in England right now. Whether England will take advantage of it in future, that's another story. But okay, so the thing is, another thing that we wanted to share on is Tropical Storm Lee. And let me just, and I felt the need to share this. It was very important. It's just a very quick thing. Let me see if I can find it. And I heard about this on the Fox Weather Channel. And when I heard it, I said, this is important. Because Tropical Storm Lee, as you may know, if you're listening to this around the time of the recording, and not years later, Tropical Storm Lee came and it was churning for a long time, way in the Atlantic. And as it was approaching America, around the time of its death, and it just kept going and it just slowly churning, when a massive storm in the Atlantic Ocean. Did I say Pacific? If I did, I apologize. But it was brewing in the Atlantic Ocean and coming towards America. And as it was coming, it was almost as if it was indirectly triggering storms way up here in New Jersey and even in New England, and wind storms and stuff like that, even though it was all the way down near Puerto Rico. But it kept coming and coming, and then it was kind of shielded off the coast and went along the coast. But it was a long-running hurricane and storm. And interestingly, it died off around the September the 18th. It's as if it came to say, this is the end of America. And that storm represented the death of America. It started shortly before September the 6th. And it died shortly, like a day or kind of went away out of America around September the 18th. So it stayed around for the whole death period. It finally hit, you could say, America, making landfall, shall we say, because it didn't hit the East Coast. It just went around as if there was, you know, thankfully this bubble of protection, especially around here in the New York area. And it hit Maine. But when it hit Maine, I heard there was a lot of stuff going on. It did a lot of damage in Maine. But it wasn't like a mass casualty, you know, count. And I was concerned that people would think, oh, okay, this means that Lee was not as deadly or evil as we thought it was. And anyone who makes more of Lee than it really was is just exaggerating. And I knew there had to be a death. It's like I was waiting. There, somebody has to die in Maine. And I'm sorry for sounding so callous, but it's somebody has to die in Maine. And then I heard the story that somebody did die in Maine. And let me read the headline here on the Daily Mail again. This was posted on September the 16th. That was the day that I believe South Carolina died. Shortly after the three New England states died. Rhode Island, New Hampshire, and Connecticut died from the 13th through the 15th of September 2023. On the September the 16th, this story comes out. It says, and Maine is in New England, in the New England area. So it had been hitting those three states, Rhode Island, Connecticut, and New Hampshire, along with the rest of New England, and then it finally hit Maine. And it says here, Tropical Storm Lee claims first victim is Maine man, 51, is killed when tree limb felled by extreme weather falls on his car. And he was driving through Searsport, 30 miles south of Bangor, Maine. So this motorist was killed by a tree limb that fell on him. And it says the unnamed man. I don't know why. I felt it was very important to know this guy's name, but for some reason the man's name was not released. Maybe it was released later, but not in this story. It says here, the unnamed man was driving on US 1, which winds along Maine's coast from Portland to the town of Calais on the Canadian border. The tree limb fell on his car. The car was like his protection, but it was not enough to protect him, and he died. At 51, I've always associated, for some reason, from many years ago, with deception. With something that comes in kind of alluring, but it's deception. So it's as if this man was deceived, thinking that he was safe with inside his car, and a tree fell on him and proved him wrong. And I believe it's a figure of how conservatives, because this happened, or at least the story was posted on the day that South Carolina died. And South Carolina is about as conservative as you can get in America. And to me, it's a figure of people who think that they can be protected by their conservative values and their conservative schemes and our founding fathers and the Constitution and blah, blah, blah. And instead of the truth was saying, hell no, you are not going to escape the death of this country by holding on and taking cover under the Constitution, because the Constitution is not strong enough to protect you from what's coming and from what came. And that's why the country's dead. And I felt that was very important. So Tropical Storm Lee went and sought out this guy and killed him. At the age of 51, the age of deception, shall we say, or an age that represents the deception of conservatives thinking that their car, called conservatism, was strong enough to save this country from its destruction. That was very important to share. And the other thing that we wanted to talk about, speaking of Maine, since Hurricane Lee hit Maine, there was a significance in Lee hitting Maine, because Maine is the easternmost state in the country. So we had what happened with the fire in Maui, and I forget the name of the storm that triggered the winds that then triggered the fire and all this stuff in Lahaina. We had this happening in Hawaii, which is the westernmost state in America out of the 50 states, the one that you have to go the west, westernmost to reach. And then you have Maine, which is the easternmost state in the country. So it's like this comprehensive death. And I think that's why Tropical Storm Lee, as it represented the death of the country during its whole journey across the Atlantic Ocean, during the entire death period, it finally hit land in Maine, or hit Maine the hardest, in a more direct way, as if to say the final blow to the country, you're done. So it's a comprehensive death from west to east, you're done. There is no place of refuge. You're all done. And Maine, interestingly enough, was not one of the 13 original colonies. So if you go to the Wikipedia article of Maine, you'll find that it says that the territory of Maine was confirmed as part of Massachusetts when the U.S. was formed after the Treaty of Paris, which was signed on the 3rd of September, 1783, which is 1783 is 240 years ago. So the Treaty of Paris was the treaty between the colonies and Great Britain that kind of sealed our independence. It's as if, you know, that's when the Treaty of Paris was signed, it was like official. Now Great Britain no longer claims to have anything to do with the colonies. The colonies are now free to go, you could say. And it happened on the 3rd of September. Interestingly, it happened in September as well. And America died on the 6th of September, 240 years later. So 240 years and 3 days later, we were dead after the Treaty of Paris. And Maine had been kind of contested with the British Empire, but in the Treaty of Paris, it was kind of sealed. Yeah, the territory of Maine is part of Massachusetts. So Maine did not exist as a standalone colony. It was inside Massachusetts. And then it says in the Wikipedia article, long-standing disagreements over land speculation and settlements led to Maine residents and their allies in Massachusetts proper forcing an 1807 vote in the Massachusetts Assembly on permitting Maine to secede. The vote failed. So, and then it says, secessionist sentiment in Maine was stoked during the War of 1812 when Massachusetts pro-British merchants opposed the war and refused to defend Maine from British invaders. In 1819, Massachusetts agreed to permit secession, sanctioned by voters of the rapidly growing region the following year. But it's interesting that the people of Maine wanted to secede from Massachusetts, and the War of 1812 between America and Britain happened, and the people of Massachusetts had pro-British merchants who opposed the war and refused to defend Maine from British invaders, and that's when Maine said we really want to get out of Massachusetts. So it was like a betrayal. Massachusetts was willing to, there were people in Massachusetts who were willing to sell Maine out to the British. Eventually formal secession from Massachusetts and admission of Maine as the 23rd state occurred on March 15th, 1820. As part of the Missouri Compromise, which geographically limited the spread of slavery and enabled the admission to statehood of Missouri the following year, keeping a balance between slave and free states. So what happened was there was a compromise, again, one of those compromises, you know, where America was never committed radically to the truth, always compromising, because all of this battle between the states, you know, federalism at play. And they did this Missouri Compromise where they had to kind of keep a balance between free and slave states. So they allowed Missouri in as a slave state, if I'm not mistaken, and then they allowed Maine in as a free state to keep the balance. You know, so Maine was born out of compromise. It was not born out of conviction. It was born out of compromise, if you catch what I'm trying to say. And it was born as the 23rd state, and 23 is a very bad number in many ways. It's a figure of the matriarchal system. The matriarchal system that was kind of the undergirding element that led to our country's fall. Stupid conservative Christians in America maintaining their matriarchal system inside their churches. Their church system is matriarchal at heart, and that's why it never had the power to do anything to overcome the destruction being brought upon this nation. So Maine, so Tropical Storm Lee hit the 23rd state of the Union as it left and sealed the death of America, and I find that very significant. A state that was born out of compromise, not out of conviction. If Maine had been born earlier, it would have been born out of conviction. And consider the pro-British merchants in Massachusetts. You know, America was already a free nation, and they wanted to go back to being under British rule. They had no conviction, and they were willing to sell out Maine. Compromise and treachery. So that's what's involved in the birth of Maine, unfortunately. And that's why, you know, and that's a part of the elements that led to our demise. And that's why Lee went as a parting shot, hit Maine, to represent a whole bunch of things. And so another story we want to share on quickly. It's out in the New York Post. This was published on September 22nd, 2023. So it's one day or a few hours before this recording. And the New York Post, the title of the article says, "Tropical Storm Ophelia Forecast to Make Landfall in North Carolina. State of Emergency Declared." So there's been this tropical storm that's been that started brewing in front of North Carolina. It's just started brewing and brewing and brewing, and suddenly became the storm. And now it's about to hit North Carolina, and that's going to go up the coast. So a forecast kind of rainy weather here in the New York area as well for the next couple of days. So the thing is that there's a significance in this storm. It says here, several states are hunkering down as tropical storm Ophelia barrels towards the East Coast, where it's expected to make landfall on Saturday. Saturday would be the day of this recording, September 23rd. With a life-threatening storm surge, heavy rains, and fierce winds. It's expected to make landfall in North Carolina before turning north, battering the coast with 50 to 70 mile per hour winds. More than 7 million people are under some kind of tropical weather alert from the Tar Heel State to the Delmarva Peninsula. So far, the governors of North Carolina, Virginia, and Maryland have declared states of emergency. Impacts from Ophelia could be felt in the Outer Banks on Friday, September 22nd. As the storm was 90 miles south of Cape Hatteras and heading northwest at around 12 miles per hour. It says here, up to 4 feet of storm surge may impact the Outer Banks up into Chesapeake Bay. That'd be, you know, in the Virginia, Maryland area. So the reason why I'm sharing this is that it's not a coincidence, because North Carolina, and this confirms, and I had hesitation about this, whether or not North Carolina was the colony that died on September the 18th, the last of the 13 colonies to die, or whose calling died, you could say. And this is a confirmation that now Ophelia went and hit directly at North Carolina, as if to say, yes, you're the last one to die in this death process that America has just gone through. It's a confirmation of that, why North Carolina is the one being targeted directly as being the last colony that died. And I feel like there's something else to say here, but let me just read here. It says, rain could also devastate communities inland, with 3 to 5 inches expected along the I-95 corridor from North Carolina up through Connecticut and Rhode Island, with some isolated totals as high as 7 inches possible. It's all part of the death process. And Ophelia, I don't quite understand this, but Ophelia represents a lot. The name itself represents a lot to me, because of the hurricane Ophelia that hit, if I'm not mistaken, in 2005. I think Ophelia hit in the Gulf Coast, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong on that. In that season when Katrina and Rita hit those big hurricanes in 2005, I believe Ophelia was one of them. And Ophelia represents someone who is helpful. I think that's what the name means, if I remember correctly. So I don't know exactly how this plays into the situation with North Carolina. Ophelia represents something that's precious and that's very helpful. But I don't know how that relates here as that storm hits, but I know it's significant. And that the fact this name is being reused from a name used back in 2005, if I'm remembering correctly, I think is significant. So let me just quickly mention another article here on the Daily Mail. If I can find it. Let's see. Yes, it's here. This was posted on the 17th of September. That would be the day, let me see. That would be the day that Georgia died. So one day before the full death of the country of America. The headline says revealed, colon, the U.S. has suffered a record $23 billion climate disaster so far this year, costing an eye-watering $57.6 billion as tornadoes, wildfires, and flooding ravage the nation. So it says here, a record 23 climate events, which each racked up at least $1 billion in losses, have been listed in 2023, causing 253 deaths with 4 months still to go to the year 2023. It says Hurricane Idalia and the Maui wildfires. Yeah, that was the name of the storm, Hurricane Idalia. If I remember, yes. Idalia is the one that hit Florida. I forget the name of the storm that led to the winds, that led to the Maui wildfires. For some reason, it escaped my mind. But it says here, Hurricane Idalia and the Maui wildfires tipped the scales to eclipse the previous annual record of 22 events with a 10-figure price tag in 2022. It is interesting. 23 $1 billion disasters have happened. And we still have 4 months to go. And as the country has died, so there will be more. I would not be surprised if there are more. But the fact that they all happened just as America died, finalized its death on September the 18th, is significant. And 23, again, that number, that ominous number of the matriarchal system that we have briefly talked about, the system where the server and organizer personalities dominate over all the others, where the judge personality is suppressed and distorted, where the visionary personality is suppressed and distorted, and where the conqueror personality is suppressed and distorted. Those are the three male personalities. And when those three become subservient to the other two, the server and organizer, we have a matriarchy. You know, that's what also kind of even literally represented in the number 23, where the two has more predominance than the number three. Because two is in the 10-digit position, and three is in the single-digit position, if you catch my drift. I know it's not a coincidence. And they start talking about climate change and all that rubbish here in this article. But let me quickly, say this. I remember in 2004 and 2005 when the website where these recordings are posted was born. Those were the two most prolific years in terms of, if you go to the articles that were written, most of them were written 2004, 2005 in terms of articles per year. Those were the two most prolific years. And a significant number, a core set of articles and postings were made in those 2 years. When the website was born in 2004, and suddenly we had storms hitting Florida. I remember Hurricane Charlie, Hurricane this, Hurricane that, Hurricane the other, and the tropical season just became very intense, and a lot of stuff was going on. And then 2005, the second year of the website, it was even worse. That's when Katrina hit New Orleans, and we had Rita, and we had all these storms. And to the point that, you know, we had Hurricane Rita, which means we were into the letter R, because, as you know, hurricanes are named in alphabetical order, and usually the average is 14 named hurricanes, so that's all the way up to the letter N, usually. But that year we just kept going and going and going into Rita, and I think there must have been other hurricanes after that. But the thing is that it was just this wave of weather events hitting America, and people kept saying climate change, and I knew it had nothing to do with the climate change as people understand. Yes, it was climate change in a different way. Because climate change claims that human events are affecting the weather and warming the planet and killing the polar bears and all that rubbish. But in a certain sense, it was climate change that human events were affecting the weather. But it was because in that critical time period, it was like as if America, something had opened up. As the website was being was sharing all these truths, something was opening in the atmosphere, and then it was all these weather events were manifesting something, like calling America to attention, to wake it up, and to have it kind of come to life, and realize what's going on, and these were manifestations of things that were happening underneath the surface, and so. When I started to hear all these climate change idiots talking about this as an excuse to justify their ideology, I knew that after 2005, it would stop. As if to prove to them, hey, this has nothing to do with your carbon emission superstition and false science. And then so it happened. After 2005, 2006 and onwards, suddenly, the hurricanes that they kept saying, now this is proof that it's going to be happening every year, this is the result of global warming, blah, 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 blah. Well, 2006, suddenly, practically no storms. 2007, no storms. 2008, no storms. And we went years without really any major hurricane event after those two intense years, as if the truth was saying to these morons, hey, it's not what you think it was. These meteorological events are a reflection of things going on in the atmosphere of humanity in the course of human events, not because of global warming, carbon emissions and all that. It had nothing to do with that. It's our actions as human beings, and we stir things in the atmosphere, and all these things that are happening are because of the death of America. And I can tell you, you know why they changed it from global warming to climate change, the term? Because they realized that the Earth is not warming up. The average temperature is not warming up. So they had to kind of change strategy and say climate change, so that anytime there was some sort of weather event in the world, they could say climate change. Because and I can tell you, for example, here in America, you know, we hear about all the heat in Texas and all these parts. I can tell you, as a witness, having lived here in the New York area, this summer was unusually mild. Yes, there were some hot days, and the days that were hot were usually not hot because the temperature was high. It was just muggy, and I think it's from all the storms and all this humidity that's been stirring up from all the judgments on this country that, you know, we started having these, you know, humid days where the humidity was extremely high, and then temperatures that would have been more or less acceptable became, you know, a little bit intolerable, but it was just a few days here and there, but it was unusually mild. So I can tell you that when you hear all these warm temperatures in some places, you can rest assured they're being countered by unusually mild temperatures in other places, and then it all averages out, because this is all these are concentrations of weather events to represent things that are happening in the course of human activity, of human events. And that's why these storms and all this incredible stuff has been happening, one thing after another, because America, this is the year of America's death, 2023, because we never overcame the matriarchy of 23, and especially conservative, stupid conservative American Christians who were caught up in their matriarchal system, and they're still trapped in it. Just like the guy in that car, thinking that that's how they're going to get out of danger, and the car is worthless, useless. But America just does not want to get that. We wanted to share that. Now that we've mentioned this, let's move on to something else. Last Sunday, some 6 days ago from this recording, I had nothing to do, and I was flipping through the channels, and I landed on a public channel, one of those PBS type channels, which are generally kind of like a little boring, but sometimes they have interesting shows, and I also stay away from them because when they have certain shows, sometimes they have a very liberal anti common sense or reality slant to them, so I avoid them. But some of their documentaries are pretty good and pretty interesting, and this time, for some reason, one of the channels, one of those PBSC channels, had a documentary on Grace Kelly. And I started to watch it, and I felt this thing within me, like, this is very relevant. So pay attention, as if a voice inside of me was saying, this is very relevant, pay attention. So I started paying attention. And what drew my attention was that they kept saying Philadelphia over and over and over again. And the reason why they would bring up Philadelphia is that Grace Kelly, the actress, was born in Philadelphia, and I had no idea about that. I up until then knew very little about her, to be frank. But she was born in Philadelphia, and just for some reason they just kept getting brought up over and over again. And I knew that it's like the message was she represents the foundation of the country, that the first state that died, the first colony that died, that represented the death of the country, was Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania was the big, was when Pennsylvania died, the country died. Pennsylvania and Philadelphia in particular was where the nation was founded. That's where the Constitution was ratified, and where the Declaration of Independence was signed, if I'm not mistaken, and all these things had happened. Philadelphia was the first, you could say, significant capital of America. I think it was in Baltimore for a while, and then it was in New York for a while. George Washington was inaugurated in New York, not in Washington, D.C., in New York. But the thing is, Philadelphia was the first capital, you could say, of the country, the first major center of the country. That's where we were founded, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So this actress, Grace Kelly, was born in Philadelphia. And her father was a very harsh man. And I'm going to read something from the article, from the Wikipedia article of Grace Kelly. It says, and the documentary, by the way, pointed that out constantly about her father's harshness towards her. So it says here in the Wikipedia article, despite her parents' initial disapproval, Kelly decided to pursue her dream of becoming an actress. Her father was particularly displeased with her decision, as he viewed acting as a slim, quote, a slim cut above streetwalker, unquote, at the time. And by streetwalker, I'm not sure if he means what I think he means, but I think he did mean what I think he meant. In 1947, Kelly signed with the Walter Thornton model agency, gracing the covers of magazines. So she, and I believe that, and then she eventually won an Oscar for Best Actress in 1954 for, I think, the Country Girl film. And when she received the Oscar, her father was like, I forget, but the documentary spoke of the dismissive remarks that her father made. About like, she's going to fade into oblivion or something about her acting going bad afterwards, or that Oscar is not really that valuable, doesn't mean much, or anything like that. So even after she had achieved, you know, the maximum trophy that you could say you can achieve as an actor in America, he kept poo-pooing her. And that also correlates with what we said about Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has the judge personality. That's what Pennsylvania represents. And the fact that this guy, this father was so harsh, represents the judgmental behavior. So it's the judgment personality gone awry and trying to kill the dream he got in the way of the fulfillment of the calling of this of his own daughter, and I think that's all very relevant. And as you know, eventually she won the Oscar in 54, and 2 years later, or less than 2 years later, she got married to the Prince Rainier III of Monaco and became Princess Grace Kelly, or Princess Grace. She lost her surname, you could say, so she just became Princess Grace. But so she reached the pinnacle of success as an actress, and then she gave it all up and became married to this man. And when I saw the documentary, I could see the face of the Prince Rainier. There was a kindness to him. He was not an evil or kind of pompous prince or, you know, king or royalty. They had some home videos that they were taking, you know, and in one of the videos, yeah, they had two, I forget how many children they had, but in that, it's not video, it's tape, I don't know what the technical term is, but the thing is that in this footage, shall we say, he's playing, they show a lot of footage of him playing with the kids, and in one of them, two of the kids are dressed in cowboy attire. And they have these, you know, toy pistols, and the two kids are you could see them kind of like behind their father, you know, the Prince Rainier, and Prince Rainier is walking away from the camera, and with the two kids behind him pointing their toy guns at his back, and he has his hands up, and he's going into a house. So it's kind of like symbolizing that the two kids are like the sheriff or whatever, and they've captured the Prince Rainier, and they're taking him to jail. That's basically what you can see. But it's so interesting that he has his hands up and he's, you know, being led into, quote, prison or jail by his two little kids, you know, with cowboy hats and guns, and that shows humility. You know, it shows him going down to the level of the kids. Like he didn't go like Prince, you know, like the royalty in Britain. You know, like Betty the Second, the way she was, she really kind of was very dismissive towards Charles. And Charles was also a little bit standoffish. And it remains, Chuck the Turd remains standoffish. So there was none of that. So you can see the kindness in the man. You can see it in his face, in his expression. There was humility, and grace also represented that, emanated that same humility and kindness. There was no self-righteous arrogance in her. And she, as I watched her, she reminded me a lot of Princess Di. And I wonder if Princess Di kind of watched Grace Kelly growing up and tried to emulate her. I don't know. There might be something there. I'm not quite sure. But there's a connection between the two. Like there's a certain similarity between the two. And the thing is that, as some of you may know, she died at an early age of 52. And she died on the 14th of September, 1982. And I remember when I was a kid, I vaguely remember hearing about her dying, but it didn't resonate with me because I didn't really know who she was. I had no connection with her, you could say, or awareness of her. I just knew, you know, that was a, it was news that she had passed away, and I vaguely remember that. In the 1980s, 1982, that's when it was like in Ronald Reagan's second year as president. And I was a kid in Baltimore, and I don't quite remember hearing it. I do vaguely remember somewhere the news story of Grace Kelly having passed away. And as some of you may know, she died of a car accident, and kind of made me think, oh, Princess Di died in a car accident as well. But in this case, it was not her being chased by the paparazzi the way it happened with Princess Di. What happened was she was been on a trip, and she was returning on the, from this trip with her daughter. The two of them were in the car, and they were going down this you know, these winding roads in, you know, in Monaco, going back to their house or mansion or whatever. Or they were going to a certain place because they, you know, obviously had several residences. And she was driving, and she lost control of the car. I don't know exactly what happened, and she went off and off the road, and fell, you know, way down. And her daughter, thankfully, survived. I'm trying to recall exactly what happened. I think that as she was there injured, she her concern was, "Are you okay?" You know, with her asking her daughter if she was okay. And that's the kind of person she was. Unfortunately, she, you know, they did. I don't know if she died on the spot or was taken to hospital and died at hospital. And I don't remember exactly the details from the documentary. But the thing is that she died on the 14th of September, 1982. And then she was buried, according to the Wikipedia article. And I think I saw it in the documentary as well. And that hit me on the 18th of September, 1982. 18th of September, the last day of America's death. And I know that is not a coincidence at all. And the 14th of September would be the day that New Hampshire, the colony of New Hampshire, died. Not sure how that fits into the whole thing, but the thing is that she was buried on the 18th of September. And it's interesting, all these burials and deaths of royalty associated to the death of America. Because the brain death of America happened from the 6th to the 8th. The 6th, the funeral of Princess Di. The 8th, the death of Betty II in England. And then the 18th, the date of the burial of Princess Grace of Monaco. And 52 is, to me, it's always a number of unnecessary suffering. When people suffer, unnecessarily, when they go through things that they really didn't need to go through, but other people force them to go through them. And I think that's why she died at the age of 52. It's like a death that was not necessary. I wonder if in a sense her death was a sacrifice that extended our life in some way, that was contributed to our I don't know. I really don't know. But the fact that so 52 is unnecessary suffering, and in a sense, our death, the death of America, was unnecessary, and it has caused unnecessary suffering for the people who were the truth seekers. Because now that the country has died, we have to go through unnecessary suffering, and I think that some of us will have to, hopefully, leave the Americas and migrate to Europe, just like she did, she left New York, and she left from New York, interestingly enough, and she left for Europe, and that's where she had her life. And I think even as a princess, her father was still not very receptive of her, or, you know, he still treated her like she was not like she was a failure. And her father had another daughter who was his favorite, and he was always dismissive of Grace Kelly because she was not athletic like her other siblings, like someone who was special, precious, not valued, and had to go somewhere else, I think her death represents some sort of, I don't know, sacrifice, or I don't know how to explain it. And now all of us were in unnecessary suffering as the country has died. We'll have to somehow do things that we didn't need to do if America had responded. We're running short on time, so I'm just going to say two more things very quickly. There's this story that came out on the Fox Business website, foxbusiness.com, and it was posted on the 18th of September, the date of America's death, the final date of America's death, period. It was posted on September the 18th, 2023 at 4:40 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. So the title of it says, U.S. national debt hits $33 trillion for the first time in history. This article was written by Megan Henney of Fox Business. It says here, the national debt, which measures what the U.S. owes its creditors, hit $33.04 trillion as of Monday afternoon, and Monday afternoon in this case means the 18th of September, according to new data published by the Treasury Department. By comparison, just four decades ago, the national debt hovered around $907 billion. So $907 billion is $93 billion short of $1 trillion. So around 40 years ago, which is around the time of Ronald Reagan, the greatest president in American history, flawed as he was, and so sad, he was the greatest, but even so, he left a lot to be desired, which is kind of speaks to the sadness of our history. Of our nation's history. But the thing is that around the time of Grace Kelly's death in the early 80s, the national debt was around $900 billion. Not even $1 trillion. And 40 years later, it's more than 33 times that. 33 trillion dollars. And 33 is like a, yeah, 33 is a bad number, or not a bad number. How can I say? It's a number of death. That's what. Let's put it that way. It's a number of death. And not death in a good way. This is bad death because it's debt. It's just accumulation of unnecessary debt. And then it says here, ironically, the historic debt level comes as Congress races to avert a government shutdown at the end of September. So now they're going to have the silly fight that they have every year. You know, the debt limit, not raising the debt limit, the government shutdown, and then Democrats, using demagoguery to kind of stir the people and say, oh, the Republicans want to cut off Social Security checks and all this stuff. And then eventually the Republicans cave and they raise the spending limit, and then the country continues getting into more debt, more debt, more debt. It's just a show, and no one stands up for anything because we have a system left by the founding fathers where even if you want to stand up for the truth and kind of end the nonsense, end the craziness, the bills that would be needed to end the craziness need to go through the Senate and the House. And the Senate, it has the 60% majority system stupidly enabled by the Constitution of the Founding Fathers. And so you need a supermajority in the Senate to get anything substantial, because if you don't have 60%, if they really want to block you, if they don't like you, they can do the filibustering thing. And I know the filibustering thing is something that's, I think technically it's not in the Constitution, but it's enabled by the Founding Fathers because they said each chamber can decide their own rules and regulations. Somebody made up this rule and they've been following it all along. So to break up a filibuster, you have to have a 60% majority to break it. So if you have a controversial bill, the opposing party can just filibuster until, you know, hell freezes over. And then they kill the bill. So nothing that is transformational, that requires political courage, can pass in the system that the Founding Fathers left behind, the gridlock system. So we have the debt, you know, growing at $33 trillion. And it's interesting that there was a need to post this article on the date of America's final day of America's death, September the 18th. Boom. The debt is $33 trillion today. It's like that day, as America finalized its death process, boom, we crossed the threshold from 32 to 33. And we're on our way to a decline as a nation. We're going to be a third world nation. This is Argentina, part two. That's why Messi shows up in America this year, and everybody is hailing him, and they don't realize Messi is a symbol of death. It's Argentina coming to America. America becoming another Argentina. Argentina was one of the wealthiest, most prosperous economies in the world at the start of the 20th century. Look at the mess it is now. It's a disaster. And we are going to be the same way. It might take a while, but I keep saying 30 years, but maybe I'm being optimistic. Maybe it's going to be even faster than that. But the country's just going to collapse and be this third world wasteland. And all the illegals who've come here are going to regret having come here, because it's like just coming back to leaving one place to go to another place that's the same, if not worse. And speaking of illegals, and I didn't mean that was an unintentional segue. I wanted to share this article very quickly, and then we'll stop talking. For today, on the dailymail.com, this was posted today, September 23rd, 2023, on the day of this recording. It says, it's the new Ellis Island, quote, And then it says hundreds of migrants flood into New York City's or NYC's or New York City's Roosevelt Hotel as Big Apple becomes epicenter of the border crisis. And Mayor Eric Adams says he'll ask judge to suspend right to shelter rules. Because New York City is a sanctuary city. They signed laws that make it, see, that's what federalism and local government, the local government system that we have enables. New York City has laws sanctioning, like saying we are going to be a sanctuary city, and if an illegal alien comes here, we are going to give him cover, give him or her cover, and we're going to provide services for them. It's in the law. So, in other words, it's saying to the federal government, if somebody breaks federal law, then we are going to shield him under state law. And not only shield him from punishment from you, we are going to help him and reward him or her for breaking federal law. Because they don't provide that sort of help to legal aliens. It's only illegal aliens. And it's in the law. So all the illegals that have been coming, the mayor, the city of New York, are obligated to spend money on them and to help them and to give them housing. It's required by local law, and it's New York City law, and it's New York state law. So it's federalism, you know, doing its wonders once again. But what I wanted to share here, aside from, so it says here, it says the Big Apple has taken at least 95,000 migrants so far to 2023. 2023, which is only 9 months in, more or less, or less than full 9 months, has seen 95, and I think that number is low. I think the real number is even higher, but at least the official number is 95,000. Illegal, and they say migrants. I hate it. It's illegals. It's not migrants. It's illegals. 95,000 illegal aliens. And obviously, she says migrants because this was written by Germania Rodriguez Poleo. So obviously, Ms. Rodriguez is going to say migrants and not illegal aliens. But the thing is that 95,000 illegals. Imagine that. It's almost 100,000. 100,000. I mean, I think Hoboken has 100,000 people. And maybe I'm exaggerating. 100,000 people. That's one big town. That's one small city of illegals. So just think about that number. And but what kind of saddens me is this thing about the Roosevelt Hotel being the new Ellis Island. And the Roosevelt Hotel, I wondered, I said to myself, where's that hotel? So I looked it up. And it saddened me to see where it was. It's on 45th Street and Madison. And I think that after I saw the address, it's, oh, I know where that hotel is. 45th Street and Madison Avenue in Manhattan in New York. And I saw that as an affront because I remember, it's a long story and time is running short, so I'll just be very brief about it. I felt that if America got restored and New York became the center of this revival and this transformation of the country, that personally I would be in a place on 44th Street by the MetLife building. And in a certain way, that has been fulfilled. I'm not going to go into details, but every Saturday when I go to New York, I go to an office that is on 45th Street, but I have to go through 44th Street and go through the MetLife building, which is what used to be the Pan Am building. I get to 45th Street and then I enter the place, but officially the address I think is 44th Street. But the thing is that I'm so in a sense I'm in a sad fulfillment or symbolic fulfillment of what would have been a greater, more literal fulfillment if things had been different. So now that I have this place where I'm established every Saturday in New York, a few blocks, and that's 44th, 45th between Lexington between Lexington and Park Avenue, you could say. But Madison is right nearby, so technically it's almost like two blocks away from where I am. And it's as if where I was established, where it would have been in the center of a great revival, a great transformation. Now, two blocks away, there's a flood of illegals, right there, right next door, you could say, as if to say, we don't want what you have, we'd rather have this. So now the flood of illegal third world rubbish is coming. And I'll say, and having said that, I do believe that maybe a few of them, maybe one or two, maybe three of them, are people that needed to be here. You know, even if America had lived, people that needed to be free from the oppression of Latin America, who had a legitimate reason for coming here, and who should have been welcomed in some way, we always needed to change our immigration system. So some of them were not rubbish, I don't know. But the vast majority of them are, and I say that in the sense that they come with third world values, because I've seen them. I've seen them in New York. I see how they behave. And I know I see that they are not, they don't have first world values. And it's not a matter of having wealth or not having wealth. You can be the poorest person in the world, but you can have first world values. You can see it in the person, the character, the integrity, the righteousness. But the vast majority of these people just don't have any of that. And so it's like an affront that they have been put like right next to the place that would have been the hub of a great transformation of the country. It's as if America said, we don't want that. We want this. And we'd rather have this than have what the truth, what you and the other truth seekers, and I hope to include myself in that group, had to offer to this country. So now this Roosevelt Hotel has turned into this place, and it's not a very nice place to look at. It's a mess, and everywhere illegals are, there's always a lot of littering and rubbish. And I've heard horror stories about what goes on in that place. A lot of illegals just smoking cannabis, and some of them engaging in lewd acts in the hallways and stuff like that. But so that's what America has descended into. But it's fitting because America is now a third world country. It has died. So we have talked about the how the weather and the climate has expressed the death of the country, and we finish on a note of that evidences the country's decline. America is dead, and it shall rise no more. Thank you very much for listening.